Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, praying for unity among Christians. Pope Benedict XVI reminds us to focus on the spiritual sharing of faith during this week of prayer for Christian unity. And praying for peace in the Holy Land. At the conclusion of their week-long pilgrimage to Israel and Palestine, visiting Catholic bishops call for urgent action to build trust and put an end to the conflict in the region. We hear from the head of the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops about ways to advocate for justice and peace in the Holy Land. Welcome to the programme. The week of prayer for Christian unity was at the heart of Pope Benedict's Angelus message on Sunday to the thousands of pilgrims and tourists gathered in St. Peter's Square. Reminding the crowds that the week of prayer will conclude this coming Thursday, the feast of the conversion of St. Paul, with the celebration of Vespers in the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, the Pope urged all Christians to focus on their spiritual sharing of faith in order to deepen the ecumenical dialogue. My colleague Catherine Smybert takes a closer look.
May all Christians, strengthened by the gifts of the Holy Spirit, have the courage to share the good news of our Lord with the poor and afflicted.
Christians, said the Pope, are heirs to pastor visions, but Christ can do anything. Quoting the theme for this week's observance from the Gospel of Mark, the Pope said, Christ makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. He can instill in Christians the ardent desire to listen and to communicate with one another, as well as speaking together with him the language of mutual love.
A lui il linguaggio dell'amore reciproco.
The Holy Father stressed that the ecumenical commitment to Christian unity is not limited to experts, but is for everyone. Ecumenism, he said, is a deep dialogical experience. It's listening and talking to one another, knowing each other better. It's a task that everyone can accomplish, especially in terms of spiritual ecumenism based on prayer and sharing that is now possible between Christians.
La settimana di preghiera per l'unità dei cristiani ci ricorda così che l'ecumenismo.
It's a biblical subject, the Holy Father said he wanted to comment on further this coming January 25th, the liturgical feast of the conversion of St. Paul, when he'll preside over an ecumenical Vespers celebration in the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls. The Holy Father invited us all to join him there, saying, I expect you to come in great numbers to that meeting, since unity can be especially achieved through prayer, and the more prayer is unanimous, the more it's appreciated by God.
Upon you and your loved ones, I invoke the grace and peace of Christ the Lord.
The idea is that we are, as Christians, have our ears opened and our tongues loosed so that we can then be effective agents in the world. And that is the fundamental idea of the theme for this week.
Father Fred Bliss teaches ecumenical theology at the Angelicum University here in Rome. I asked him what he sees as the real aim of this annual week of prayer for Christian unity.
Well, I would say there are two points of focus. The first is that it is a reminder to each of us that we have got a responsibility to be effective agents in the whole enterprise of working for unity, not only clergy and religious, but also the entire body of the church, lay people and clerical, working together for an effective union sometime in the future. The other side to it is that it reminds us of the value of spiritual ecumenism. And I think that is at the foundation of where the church is going to go, that we're going to have to, as it were, appreciate more deeply what it means to be inspired, founding union in the future upon a very good spiritual relationship with God. And we've had some great examples of people who've done this. I think of the Catholic patroness of ecumenism, a little girl from Sardinia called Gabriella Sagadu. She was born at the outbreak of the First World War and died at the outbreak of the Second World War, so she lived a very short life. But she joined a strict convent in Grotta Ferrata, where she gave her life, she said, for the unity of the Church. And this was well before Vatican II. So this was a young girl had heard about an old nun who had before her offered her life for the unity of the Church. And when this old nun died, Gabriella went to the Reverend Mother and said, I want to do the same. And so she made this offering of her life for the unity of the Church. And so the scriptures, one section of the scriptures, John 17, was her favourite passage that she went to again and yet again. She died prematurely of tuberculosis. Subsequently, somebody arranged for her story to be written and went into many editions, the particular book on her life. And so she is now beatified by John Paul II, and that happened in 1983. And she is the patroness of ecumenism, and her body rests now in the relocated convent grounds in Vittoriciano near Rome also. And she is quite an inspiring figure, and that's what I think many others have followed in her footpath, in her steps, and made themselves spiritual masters and leaders in prayer for the sake of Christian unity. And that's what we're doing now. We're doing exactly as they did, but we're putting it into a week. And the idea is if we can extend it through the year like she did and make our lives an offering for the sake of the Church.
Interesting that it should be a woman inspired again by a woman religious way back before, as you say, this before the Second Vatican Council, as examples of this powerful witness to ecumenism.
That's true. And one of the very interesting features about her is it's probably unlikely that she ever met an Orthodox, a Protestant, or an Anglican. But she knew about it. And then there was another man called Maurice Villain, a Frenchman, who recognised her great value and the value of a Reformed and an Anglican, three people whom he said are really making up for us an invisible monastery. They're not living in the confines of a particular monastery. They are the invisible monastery of prayer, that is, of people who are offering their lives for this extraordinarily important dimension of the Church's life, her unity.
We tend to think, perhaps, of Catholics and Protestant or Catholics and Orthodox cooperating together nowadays on practical issues, perhaps helping with humanitarian projects together. And yet you're talking about, as you say, a completely different focus of ecumenism, aren't you? A type of ecumenism that we have to focus on in our spiritual lives.
That's right. After all, the Church is filled with grace. We give that grace a certain visibility through the goodness of our lives. But we've first of all got to imbibe that grace. And it's not a Catholic grace or a Presbyterian grace. It is the grace of Christ which is given and shared. And so therefore, the very fact that I enter into prayer with an Anglican or with a Presbyterian means there is an extraordinary union of hearts. And it is from that union of hearts that we then want to extend it out to the visible boundaries of the Church. And that's when Christianity is going to reach its most effective moment. there are all sorts of obstacles there. There are the practical obstacles, and then there are the doctrinal issues too. And this is where, as it were, going along with the prayer exercise is the dialogue. And so that by way of dialogue, we are addressing particular issues which may be getting in the way of the completeness of the union. For example, the Catholic Church and the Anglicans and the Orthodox are very much episcopal churches. So we are in dialogue with other communities, suggesting to them that the very identity of the church has got to be episcopal in character, that is, to have bishops who are the successors of the apostles, to have the full ecclesial identity. And so by way of dialogue, these issues are being addressed, and gradually, slowly, Christians, churches are coming closer and closer together. It is an extraordinary journey when one looks back over 40 years to see where we've come from and where we've arrived at.
And certainly this past year has been a very fruitful year, hasn't it, in this sense?
It has been. And we, I think, have got now to build on that. At the moment, for example, there are very good overtures being expressed between Orthodoxy and Catholicism. And we're hopeful that we will both be able to give an example to the rest of the Christian world of how we can address the issues, historic by and large, not doctrinal, historical issues, and say, now let's learn to live with the fact that there is a past, we are now going to move into the future.
Father Fred Bliss, Professor of Ecumenical Theology at the Pontifical Angelicum University here in Rome. And now from dialogue among Christians to the urgent need for dialogue between political leaders in Israel and Palestine. Following a week-long visit to the Holy Land, Catholic bishops from Europe and North America have issued a strong statement calling for new and creative ways of building trust and mutual respect among Israelis and Palestinians. The communique, entitled Breaking the Hold of Fear, Anger and Despair in the Holy Land, notes that nearly 60 years after the conflict began, new political initiatives are urgently needed to achieve a lasting justice and peace for both peoples. For 7 years now, the visiting delegation of Catholic leaders has met with local Christian communities, as well as with Israeli and Palestinian officials, to underline the deep concern of people in the West to the plight of those caught up in this conflict. This time, the bishops met with Christian Arab communities around Nazareth, as well as in Bethlehem, Ramallah and the Gaza Strip, to show moral support and find out more about the difficulties of their daily lives. Travelling with the bishops last week, I too was able to listen to the stories of fear amongst Israelis and despair amongst Palestinian families, which drives the cycle of anger, violence and oppression. In their concluding statement, the bishops acknowledge the suffering on both sides and call for confidence-building measures that could lead to the end of the Israeli occupation and the establishment of a viable Palestinian state.
And whatever happens here, in a sense, touches all of us in the world community. So for us to continue to urge strongly for peace that is built upon justice and respect for the dignity of every human person is absolutely critical.
Bishop William Skillstad of the Diocese of Spokane is president of the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops. He was part of the delegation of church leaders visiting the Holy Land, and over the coming weeks he'll be raising some of these concerns at the highest level of government, as well as among the Catholic communities in the United States. I asked him what he saw as the most significant moments of this visit and how he hopes to advocate for justice and peace for the people there.
I
I think the highlight has been to, for me personally, has been to visit the various communities, areas that we had not visited before, such as, for example, the Gaza Strip, the opportunity to go to the Nazareth area and visit the various communities there as well. In addition to that, the area around Bethlehem, it's always interesting to see new areas of development and challenge. The refugee camp there, the work of the church in the schools, those are all very, very impressive. And in some ways heartbreaking to see what's happening to people, but on the other hand, though, to see their positive spirit and also their addressing the reality at times that can be very difficult.
You also had important meetings here with Israeli and Palestinian government officials, haven't you? What were your impressions of those meetings?
Yes, over the years we have had meetings with the political figures on both sides, both on the Palestinian side and on the Israeli side. Our efforts are, first of all, to continue those relationships, but also to use them as moments of advocacy and a sharing of information and challenge that it will impact every side in this in the Holy Land. I have found those over the years to be helpful for me personally as I go back to the States, for example, in terms of advocacy back home. But I think, in addition, I would hope that it's helpful for the bishops here in the Holy Land to meet with the civic figures. They do see them periodically, but I think the atmosphere is a bit different, though, when you have bishops from other parts of the world with them visiting with the political figures here.
Can you give us any specific details of the meeting, for example, with Mr. Peres or Chairman Abbas?
I think, first of all, the meeting with Vice Prime Minister Shimon Peres was, a positive meeting in the sense that he was very strong about economic development in terms of helping people rather than just giving straightforward support to people by way of aid. How can we perhaps address more efficiently the root causes of unemployment and the need to provide jobs for this area? He sees that as much longer lasting and also far more effective in the long run. Secondly, with regard to Mahmoud Abbas, I think our meeting with him, President Abbas, that came shortly after his visit with Condoleezza Rice. And it seems as though there is a sort of a new dynamism, a new effort to really make the peace process work, to make the, for example, the roadmap become much more effective, and in a sense an indication that this will be happening over the next few years in a much more urgent cause than before.
That was really my next question to you. We know that there is going to be another meeting in the near future between the Americans and the Israelis and the Palestinians. You're really convinced, therefore, that there is a new interest, a new determination on the part of the American government to try and push for peace here?
I think for all of us, as we see the situation here, what is more and more obvious than ever before is that the particular situation here in the Holy Land is simply not sustainable, and something has to be done. People are hurting, people are suffering from every side. We have to address somehow a strong and lasting sense of justice and peace in this land. So I think I pick up, if I'm accurate in that analysis, a greater sense of urgency that we have to do something, and we have to do it now that's helpful and effective.
You yourself meet with President Bush, don't you, and other government officials. What kind of voice does your church have, the Catholic Church, in the United States, do you think, in pushing on these issues?
Our meetings here in the Holy Land with the coordination have been very helpful for us to go back to the United States, for me personally, go back to the United States and share information with our conference, with other bishops in charge of certain committees so that we can be advocates for a peace and justice here in the Holy Land. We meet with the president periodically. We meet certainly with other political figures and with legislative figures that can be very helpful. Over and above that, this information and experience will be used as information for dialogue that is going on in the United States between the various religious groups. As a matter of fact, in just a week or so, Cardinal McCarrick will chair a dialogue with amongst significant religious leaders, Jewish, ecumenical, interreligious leaders, to look at this situation here and see how we can be more helpful and effective in achieving peace here.
Of course, the bishops are constantly called upon by countries, by churches in countries all over the world for help, for moral support and for financial support. How much of a priority would you say is the Holy Land, is this Palestinian-Israeli conflict compared perhaps to other issues that you're dealing with daily?
Well, we have a specific office in Washington, D.C. of International Justice and Peace. And as a matter of fact, the director of that office is here with us, Dr. Stephen Kolecki. We play a very strong role in looking to those areas of peace and justice and development, in not only here but in other parts of the world. That I think is a very important responsibility for us. I think the United States comes across to the world community as a very strong nation, although we certainly in some ways make our own mistakes now and again, but nonetheless, though, we do have a unique opportunity to be of assistance to the other parts of the world. Over and above that, I think the United States has a very strong outreach organization through Catholic Relief Services that fosters economic development, immediate and direct aid when that is necessary for people who have experienced deprivation from whatever reason or from whatever cause. That's been longstanding in our tradition as the Church of the United States. I'm very proud of that. We have, for example, through Catholic Relief Services, presence in about 90 countries throughout the world. So that's an outreach on the part of the United States, who has so much that hopefully we can be helpful in some way of helping other parts of the world to achieve, you know, their own human dignity and development that is so necessary for the world family.
You're right. When you say talking to people here, there is a sense that somehow America has all the answers, politically, maybe financially as well. What can you personally take back from this visit? What else can you really do, perhaps, to try and make more people aware of the role that America could play in helping to resolve problems here?
I think one of the issues that surfaced last night when we met with Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinians was a sense of urgency for peace in this land. So I think when we see what's going on here, when we see the hurt and pain and violence that has been going on now for decades, really, there is an increased urgency for peace. And his criticism, for example, of some of the countries was that the urgency for peace was not high in their agenda. I think we reached a new stage now where, in a sense, our world community has become truly a global village. And whatever happens here, in a sense, touches all of us in the world community. So for us to continue to urge strongly for peace that is built upon justice and respect for the dignity of every human person is absolutely critical. And so even myself personally, I feel a greater sense of urgency to go and do something about that.
Talking about leadership level here, the bishops are talking with the leaders of the churches here in the Holy Land, and yet talking in the parishes, the people are also calling for support of local Christians, local Catholics in the United States and elsewhere. How much do ordinary Catholics in the pews, people in your own diocese of Spokane, how much do they really know or care about what happens here?
Well, after visiting here a few years ago, I made the decision that for every person that I would confirm and would receive First Eucharist when we celebrate, I would give them a rosary made here in the Holy Land, a rosary made out of olive wood. And whenever I give them this gift at the end of our celebration of confirmation and First Eucharist, I tell them that this is an expression of our solidarity for the people in the Holy Land to remember them, but also in buying these rosaries, it helps to support them economically. So all over at least the Diocese of Spokane, you know, people are aware of this. And I think that I've heard several other bishops doing the same thing. We're finding also, I think, other organizations that are buying products from the Holy Land, and people are asked to buy them to support the industry here. As you well know, unemployment is very high in the Holy Land, and this is our way of economically supporting people here. That greater awareness of our interconnectedness, and especially on the part of us who have so much, you know, we have a stewardship of our resources to share and be concerned about every person in this world who has far less than we do. So I think that's something that for me is very high priority as we try to effectively implement the social teaching of the Church.
And finally, this is your fifth visit here. What perhaps gives you most hope on these occasions?
The faith of the people here, I think the strong commitment of the bishops to serve their people and be advocates for them. It's always a delight to visit the parishes. We did last night, as you well know, visited Holy Family Parish in Ramallah to see the excitement, the welcome of the parishioners. I find, for example, going to, for example, a youth group in a refugee camp in Bethlehem, to see their excitement, their dancing, their vision for the future, but also their deep care and concern about what we, for example, as people in the U.S. would think of them. As I visited both Bethlehem and Beit Zahur, the youth groups there, their first question was, what do you people in the United States think of us? Do you think of us as terrorists? And they're hurt by that comment. There's a perception, of course, that that labels oftentimes Palestinians in general as somewhat of a terrorist group, and they're deeply hurt by that. You know, they feel that, yes, there have been some acts of violence here in this land, but we can't label people because of that, that especially for us in the church, we are people of hope and redemption and transformation. And that's our hope and dream, that we're in the journey of conversion, all of us, and how we can help make that happen. I find exciting and a wonderful ministry in the church.
My thanks there to Bishop William Skillstad of the Diocese of Spokane and President of the United States Catholic Bishops Conference. And I'll be bringing you a selection of other interviews with members of that delegation which visited the Holy Land on our English feature programme over the coming weeks, so be sure to stay tuned. And in the meantime, don't forget you can always find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, if you can, for another edition of our English feature programme. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.